Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Is It a Real Classic, a podcast about movies and TV shows where a bunch of well-versed folks come together and answer that age-old movie debate about what makes a classic. I am your host, Lit Dab Nicholas. With me today is Ray.
Hello.
There's a little start.
Thank you. I hate
snakes.
Yes. Playing Breath of the Wild currently as we film the podcast.
No.
And we also have Cobra Kai.
Sweep the leg.
KP. There we go. And today we're going to be talking about...
Vicky Vale.
That's right. Tim Burton's 1989 classic, Vicky Vale.
Oh, wait, hold on. Hell.
No, it's Tim Burton's Batman from 1989 as requested by the...
As requested by me, because I feel like... The only superhero movie we've done so far is Superman vs. the Elite.
We've only done one so far, but we are going to stretch our wings, move along, stretch our
Wonder
back
Woman.
Wings.
We did Wonder Woman.
We did Wonder Woman as a little bit of a instant knee-jerk reaction review, as I call it. But for those of you who don't know, before we get started, what is Batman about? Very good question.
This would be another of the big three.
The big three.
The big three Batman movies?
No. DC. Wonder Woman, Superman, Batman. The Holy Trinity, as one might call them.
I thought you were going to say, like, there's, like, a big three Batman movies.
I mean...
There are, but Christopher Nolan directed them.
Hey, there you go. Oh, yes. Okay, well, okay, not doing my Bane voice. Anyways, I'm going to say this for those of you who don't know, for those of us in the podcast saying, what is this movie about? I'm going to quote from HBO Max's description here. The Caped Crusader saves dismal Gotham City and gorgeous Vicky Vale from the freaky Joker. Now, there's a lot of... that's scratching the surface of what the movie's about, but I just found that description so funny. But anyway, the movie is essentially indeed about that, where you get the introduction to who the Joker is, we get introduced to who Batman is for the first time, Vicky Vale, who basically acts as our audience surrogate, going through everything, and we see the dark and grimy streets of Gotham. And figure
Tim
out...
Tim Burton. On the scene with the fury.
This is Tim Burton at his... People argue this is his best movie, and I can see why. Because it's him firing on all cylinders and just going nuts with everything that he does best.
The setting is so... You said it first off.
Yeah, like when I was watching the movie, like the entire time I was thinking, like, you, because we, like, Zack Snyder wanted to do the thing where they must make the Justice League black and white for, like, making it look like art and stuff. But honestly, you could turn, like, I don't know how it would work. And, you know, if people want to say this is a stupid idea, you can. I wonder what would happen if you turned the 89 Batman movie black and white, because there's so many harsh angles and lighting throughout the entire movie with all the hats and stuff that makes it look like it's James Cagney's about to kick down the door and say, hey. Right. Like, I was totally expecting
now,
that.
Which cartoon version does go noir like that?
That would be Batman the Animated Series.
Right. Well, yes. You got the big hats, and you have the dark alleys,
corners.
And it's all gangster stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is really good, by
it's
the way.
It's a really... And it came out after the movie, because they were, like, heavily inspired by the movie.
Right.
So they wanted
this
to kind
is
of
that.
That.
Hey, since you are the movie nerd or whatever...
I try to be.
And you are in a lot of movie circles. What is the general consensus on this movie?
The general consensus that I know of it is the fact that it is the cornerstone as to comic book movies as we now know them. It is the movie that really set the standard for, A, superhero movies being cool and, more importantly, marketable. But, two, because the only movie that ever came out similar to this beforehand was Superman in 78. But this one was huge box office smash that almost dwarfed Superman, or it probably
did. Well, they had a couple of Supermans, though.
They had a couple of Supermen.
Until they, like, they got progressively until Richard Pryor was
Richard Pryor,
one.
You know. Quest to save
the Zod one's really good, too.
Quest to save... Did he snap his neck? No, he did not. He sent him to the Phantom Zone. I had, like, a whole box set of those old movies, and that's fun.
Christopher Reeves was a really good Superman.
Christopher Reeves is a fantastic Superman. He just embodied that hometown style, but much like... Reeves, Keaton does a fantastic job in here as well as our man Bruce Wayne.
This is a very performance
heavy.
These performances in this movie are great. Kim Basinger is great.
Exactly.
The head reporter guy is great. Jack Palance,
Billy Dee Williams in it for like 5 Billy minutes, Williams. But he steals yes. every scene that he's in as Harvey Dent.
The butler, all those just wonderful performances.
When I say that like this is Tim Burton firing on all cylinders, Tim Burton has a way of like when he directs, he likes getting that kind of huge theatricality in anything that he does.
Right.
Which means a big, larger-than-life performance from people. That's why, like, when he gets Johnny Depp, he usually gets him to do all these crazy roles and stuff, right. whether that be more reserved, like Edward Scissorhands, or Off the Wall with Charlie and Chocolate Factory. Here, you can have the insane performances of Nicholson, and it works because of the set and what it is. In fact, that we're bouncing off, basing this off of Adam West's Batman, which is the only really thing people can base it off
were
of.
Were there the any comics. Special effects?
I mean, there were, because I don't think they actually exploded a chemical plant.
Right.
But
you know what I mean, right?
Yeah, there were...
It didn't have a... Go ahead.
There were, like, two, at least I can remember, in the last one. It was the smoke coming out of the balloon, which has aged, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. But,
In Joker falling, I don't...
Other than that, well, even then, that's like, Joker falling was similar to, like, Die Hard, where it's, like, Hans MacGruber falling. It's like, yeah. Okay, well, you know... But
this yeah. I'm sorry.
No, but I was going to agree with you.
I was going to say, this movie has aged, despite, like, those two, this movie has aged phenomenally.
Like a fine wine.
Because he didn't dive too far into, you know what happens when you go too far into special effects?
You can.
It's 10 years down the road, you cringe at them, because they get outdated and it doesn't work.
Yeah.
Like, I Phantom Menace.
Well, okay, let's calm down. Let's reel it. But there's a lot of you can argue whether or not it was because it was largely like special effects based in terms of like physical sets, which it probably was, but also it's a thing where it was just so I feel like because they were playing with such a darker environment, you could hide some of the flaws very easily because everything's draped in shadow,
right?
And if it looks kind of campy, again, it works because we're based this A off of like Batman, and again, previously Adam West was the only like thing we had other than that.
Right.
And also, because Tim Burton is Tim Burton, being everything larger than life and spectacular, it works. You believe it. You buy it. Like the first shot of Gotham, where you see all these very large towering figures holding up the like Ayn Rand-ish looking architecture. She didn't make it, but it reminded me of that. But you can be like, okay, sure, yeah, there's a huge power plant that looks like an upside-down Q or a P or something. That's fine. And then it explodes in all these, like, wild directions. Like, yeah, no, that's cool. I have bought this 100%. I will also say real quick about Keaton's performance is, like, his performance as like Bruce Wayne, aside from being just Batman, I feel like is also one of the... That's how he stole all of the scenes that he was in. Was not. I didn't think that he was necessarily, though he was very impressive as Batman, him as Bruce Wayne seeing the human beneath it. I don't, like, in the recent movies especially, like, you don't really see Bruce Wayne. And even in the comics, they, like, don't really care about Bruce Wayne, save for a couple exceptions.
But in this movie, yes. You don't really see Batman that much.
Exactly. That's what I find interesting about the movie called Batman, is I don't think Batman's the main character. I think it's either Joker or Vicky Vale, because they're the ones who really go through character arc and change. Really, Batman's just a static figure who slowly changes, but...
Well, you have the Joker's character arc, and you tell his origin story. Mm-hmm. But you also manage to tell Bruce Wayne's origin story through the eyes of Vicky, who's researching him as a reporter. Mm-hmm. And I think it's wonderful the way they weave Batman's origin story without starting the movie off outside of the theater. It's a little bothersome to me that they weren't leaving Zorro.
Yeah.
If you notice that.
Yeah.
That bothered me a little bit, because that kind of is key to me in the Batman origin, right?
Yeah.
But instead of doing that, they almost tease you that at the beginning of the movie.
I was confused. I'm so used to Tony Bat. Like, this is weird because I have seen this movie once when I was a child years ago on TV. I have not seen it since then, and I completely forgot that we weren't starting off with a Batman like origin story. We just see a family get mugged in an alley that just so happens to not be the Waynes.
But they're like a Midwestern family. They walk through. They don't know what's going on. They're small town. They wind up staggering into an alley, and they get mugged. And then Batman winds up getting the criminals later on. But also, that's a shot at Superman. Big time. Bam, shot across the bow. No, I'm just kidding. But they do, they tease the origin story right out the shoot. Mm-hmm. But then they give it to you slowly in increments as he's being researched. And also when the big unveil is where do you ever dance with the devil in the pale moonlight, mm-hmm. which reminds Bruce of who shot his dad. It must have been you, because not that many people are walking around saying that right before they shoot somebody.
Mm-hmm. And also that leads into the main kind of lesson of this movie being actions have consequences.
Oh, yes.
Absolutely. And the consequences here is, you know, you made me first, is there. But also, in general, there's always an arms race in comic book lore, right? Yeah. There's always, you have a Superman. Well, what combats a Superman? Well, first it's Lex, and that's not enough. And then it's Zod, and that's not enough. And then it's Brainiac.
Zorro,
and that's
Brainiac.
Every time you defeat an evil, a greater evil comes about. There's always a consequence to Spider-Man. Everything comes out of Spider-Man.
Yeah.
You know, Gotham, you couldn't get the crime done fighting off Bruce. Therefore, it becomes more complicated and we create mm-hmm. bigger and bigger. You know, the Penguin comes along and the Riddler comes along. And like, also, this is not a detective show.
It really isn't.
Which is, it's okay, but it's not.
Yeah, the biggest criticism I've always heard about Batman movies has always been like, it's called about the world's greatest detective, and it's never a detective movie. We may be getting that with Robert Pattinson. That's what we've been told, and we're not going to be talking about that because that's not the subject matter, but it's just a really interesting thing I just, based off of what you've just said, I just remembered off the top of my head. But I don't think that's a knock on the movie if I say it's like it's not a detective movie, because it's not what it's trying to be. It's not what it's trying to say.
No. What they're doing is they're telling the origin of two of the most famous characters in the history of comic lore, and they do it wonderfully well, with Jack Nicholson being a superstar.
Oh, my guy.
Every line he says in this movie is quotable.
Everything.
Everything he says is a classic.
It is. Like, if we're going to rate him as a classic, the answer is a definitive classic. Like, not only as the Joker, but just in general. Because I think one of his first performances was, oddly enough, in Little Shop of Horror, the original by Roger Corman, where he had the mini cameo playing, if you remember the musical when we watched it, Bill Murray was in the movie for like 5 seconds. Like, mm-hmm. Devine's guy who was like really hopped up on like the laughing gas. That's who Jack Nicholson played. Where he was known for having this mad laughter throughout the entire thing. And I will bet you money that it was probably Tim Burton watched that movie and said, and that's the Joker. And he's like, if I were ever to do it, that's him. No more questions asked. Thank you very much. Because of just how much life he can bring to not only just the laugh, but energy to a performance, just through how mad he looked.
Yes. Speaking of stuff that brings life and energy to the film, the score.
Oh, I'm happy you brought it up. Danny Elfman and Prince. Has there ever been a more iconic duo? I will wait.
That, dude, I agree. Totally agree. The score heightens, not the Prince part of it, which is, I mean, I'm a mark, but whatever. The Party Man scene is just off the hizzy when he comes into the museum. But what you're talking about is the actual score, I believe, Ray, and it gives it that dirty, grimy, mm-hmm. noir feel, and it stays the whole
also
time.
Also, it keeps that kind of large theatricality to it as right. well. It feels like a big Warner Brothers noir, which is funny because this is still made by Warner Brothers.
Right.
Probably where they got the sets, now that I'm saying it out loud.
But I do like, too, how you said Bruce isn't a huge part either. Like, Bruce is close to his vest with all of his thoughts and all that. And I think Michael Keaton is fantastic in his role. But I like the way we learn about Bruce through her.
Yeah. It really makes him come off as more of an interesting, like...
And through Alfred. Alfred is trying to pull him out of his shell. Mm-hmm. As he's been in it his whole life.
It's also kind of the thing where with most comic book movies, like, they expect you to read the comics. You don't really have to read the comics to get this movie.
You don't. And I think a reason why they did that, though, say from, like, being able to introduce people who are new to the never read a comic in their life, and they're like, okay, I'll watch the Bat movie. And for people who are more familiar with comics, is having Vicki Vale essentially be our audience surrogate really helps because, and I keep on saying this, the only person we've had up to this point has been Adam West. We're used to the kind of over-the-top Batman where we well, that's a great description.
We do.
But we see, like, you know, the bat, like, hand me the bat shark repellent. We're used to, like, this kind of wild nature. So to be introduced to him, first of all, terrifyingly as a shadow in the background, and then slowly weave our way up to Bruce Wayne, where you're like, I'm used to this very gaudy figure as Bruce Wayne. Where is he? And we first see him just being tapped on the shoulder saying, hey, do you know where Bruce Wayne is? And he just says, I don't know. He could be over there somewhere. He right. just is another guy in the crowd, which kind of makes it, kind of separates him out from being, oddly enough, the rest of, like, the previous association to Batman. Well, we also haven't really talked much about the plot. So, the plot of this is mainly revolved around, after the Joker is created, he basically
assumed, who Batman drops him into the bat on accident.
Batman accidentally just turns him into the Joker on accident. Yeah. After that, Joker takes over, like, the head gang, and basically, from that point on, wreaks terror throughout Gotham through these really, to harken back to the comics, really over-the-top, kind of ridiculous plans of, like, I have turned all of these products that will, you know, are full of nerve gas that will make you smile until you die. And then you think about it, it's like, actually, that's terrifying. And then right. you see it happen, you're like, actually, this is more terrifying than I thought it was going to turn out.
Right.
And I don't like looking at this anymore.
And to say the Batman didn't do any detective work is not correct entirely, because the Joker, there's a randomness to how people get the smile thing and die, is that there are little bits of the formula in different... in lipstick, in hair products, and then when you use the right combination, that is what kills you. And Batman figures that out. So there is a little bit of that there, right? Mm-hmm. And you kind of can get away from if you utilize the Joker as the main character, you can kind of get away from the detective stuff a little bit, because there's a randomness to him mm-hmm. that offsets the detective part of Batman. Unlike the Riddler, who preys on
demanding to be the best.
That's a brain battle, and the Penguin is between.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Yes.
One moment that really stood, or one scene that really stood out to me, was after the Joker electrocuted the dude, and his skeleton was sitting in the chair.
Yeah, when he was taking over the
gang. And he was talking to them, and you couldn't really tell if he was making a joke or he was legitimately hearing voices. That kind of stood out to me.
Or he was just saying,
that's Jack.
That's Jack just being Jack.
Tour de force.
I couldn't tell.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's hot under the collar.
And what's crazy about Jack Nicholson is you can see him sitting courtside at a Laker game, and it's the same vibe.
I was like, is he talking to the guy next to him?
I think he's really cool. I don't know, though.
And he's like, also, he's just like turned to like one of those people who's like, I know you played a gangster on movies, and that's like an actor thing. I want you to still remain at least 10 feet away from me. And he's probably the nicest guy on the planet.
Witches of Eastwick. Have you ever seen that? It's an older movie. It's Cher and I think Michelle Pfeiffer, Susan Sarandon.
I do believe I have not seen that one.
Okay, he plays the devil.
Oh, okay. See, that makes sense.
And home run. I mean, it's campy, but dude, you should watch it sometime. Everybody should watch that movie sometime. Because Jack, anytime you get a chance to see this guy in his
element.
Yeah, he's amazing.
Like, as an actor, like I said in he is...
Terms of Endearment. Jesus.
He's as good as it gets. You see, okay, this is like a more somber kind of Jack Nicholson.
Right.
Shout out to Papa's favorite movie. Papa being my grandfather and his father. Mm-hmm. KP's father. You have The Departed, where he plays this big Irish gangster throughout the entire movie. You got him playing the Joker. You have him in Little Shop that we said earlier. I'm sure he's phoned it in at some point in his career, but I have yet to see it, because either he's firing on all cylinders and swinging for the fences, or he goes a little too far. But either way, even when he goes too far, it's great.
And obviously, The Shining. He's good in that, in the rock opera, Tommy. This,
yeah,
by The Who.
Is
Jeez.
This is
good? He's great.
Should I?
Go ahead, buddy.
Kind of veer away from that. I was just going to ask a more general
question. Let's veer. Let's
go where you want to go.
Is this one of, if not the most important movie in comic book history?
Well, that is a very...
I don't even think it's a question.
That is...
I think it absolutely is.
That is... I can see an argument, definitely. But the only one that could maybe stand up against in terms of being important would be Iron Man. And that's because it set off the MCU. But even then, the MCU wouldn't have been born without Batman.
See, because But Iron Man is reliant on... To me, Iron Man is reliant on Spider-Man and X-Men's...
Success.
Success.
And how did they get their success?
Right.
Because you need to prove that the formula worked. And Superman proved the formula worked, but it didn't do too well in the sequels, and they're too afraid to do anything fresh and new.
And Batman gave it just a little bit of a tint of darkness to go with it that allowed for what would wind up being your Tobey Maguire and then your X-Men, and then you wind up with Iron Man, and boom, they're off
the run. Exactly. Right? I was going to say this, because this, to me at least, correct me if I'm wrong, led to the other Batmans, which led to Tobey Maguire, which led to X-Men, which led to Iron Man, which led to the MCU, which led to Endgame becoming the highest selling movie
of all time.
Of all time.
We also have skipped over Nolan, who we cannot snort past, you know, Nolan.
We can't.
We can't. We shouldn't, and we can't. Mm-hmm. Because, like, without The Dark Knight, you also wouldn't have had people taking this about comic book movies seriously.
I would say a lot of... When I talk about comic book movies, I always say, "Yeah, it's a really good comic book movie. It's a really good,
yeah."
The Christopher Nolan movies are just good movies.
Yeah,
they're just great movies. You don't have to factor in anything else. They're better than the Bonds. They're better. You know what I mean? They're incredible movies. Mm-hmm. And the only thing that I can compare them to for an adult to watch is what Marvel managed to do on Netflix.
Mm-hmm. With, like, Daredevil, Jessica Jones, Luke Cage, all that.
That's the only thing I can compare it to as far as being able to sit back and watch and really take it in as an adult. Now, don't get me wrong.
No.
The Dark Knights aren't necessarily kid movies. They can be, but they're not. You know what I mean?
Yeah. He doesn't wear hockey pads.
Yeah, right.
I don't wear hockey pads.
Should we talk about the kind of cheesier moments in this movie?
Absolutely. I'm happy we're talking about the cheesy moments because even though they were cheesy, they worked and they're... They're fun. Just because something cheesy isn't
kids ought to be able to watch these things, right?
Yeah.
It's a comic book.
Come to life. There was one moment to me that sometimes it can get maybe just a little overboard for me. Like, it goes from prime Gouda to, like, canned.
What you got against spray canned cheese,
brother?
I want to
say one thing, though. I love Bond. I wasn't trying to shoot on Bond. I love Bond.
Daniel Craig, please do not come to this place and hurt us.
I'm sorry. Go ahead. I apologize.
But, and it's specifically the moment in the last scene. Where's the karate guy?
Okay, yes.
His dropkicking.
Okay, so in the final scene, this one dude starts flipping around, gets knocked aside. Some other guy comes in at Batman, leaps from the top rope, crashes through the wood behind Batman.
That was kind of funny.
And I was like, Batman didn't do it. That's just on you, brother.
That was funny.
Like, I'm sure that was just a comedy bit. But
this,
still, like,
this movie also didn't rely on stuntmen doing Michael Keaton's work for him, and they shot it in a way where he didn't do a whole lot of fight.
Yeah, because
you see a kick here and a punch there and stuff like that.
His
neck
was so stiff in that suit, he had to do this the entire time.
Correct.
Which, if you can't see, I'm like turning 90 degrees my entire upper body.
Right. But for an action movie, he didn't have to do a whole lot. Punch here, punch here. But it didn't matter because it flowed. Everything flowed.
It wasn't as much an action movie as much as it was a noir movie, and I'm going to stick with that.
I agree.
Because, like, that's why they were able to get away with so much, because they were leaning heavily on the gangster elements, on the investigative elements, on Vicki Vale, who is the Batman.
Right.
If anything, she's the detective of this movie. Her and the reporter man whose name...
Well, and Bruce hands her the information to help her along on the case file.
Too. Yeah. I mean, we know who it is, and they make no, like... Like, Joe, like, oh, who is Batman? Like, no, they know we know. They know, like, there's a point where, like, he shows up, like, you see Batman in the Batcave. Then later you cut to, like, Bruce Wayne in the Batcave. There's, like, not a grand reveal of him being Batman because it's, like, you know.
Right.
You know who this is.
And Michael Keaton in, you know, the not letting people in, part of that is the sarcasm.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, he's walking, but he doesn't tell her who he is at first when she asks. Then they walk into his the studio
his
where
arsenal.
His arsenal room where he's got all the Ming Dynasty weapons, stuff and all that, you know. And it's like, you know, well, it's Japanese. Well, I bought it in Japan.
Yeah.
But and he does play aloof. But you can tell too he's kind of playing. Right?
Yeah.
Once you see what he does in other lines, he's not as aloof as he comes off as, but that's a way. Even when he's that's like, a disguise.
Yeah. Even when he's like facing off against the Joker, when he's like as Bruce Wayne and saying "Let's get nuts," there's an aloofness to that as well, where he's like he just takes a fire poker, smashes a vase that belongs to Vicky. First of all,
right?
I get you're a billionaire, but come on, man, and just screams, "Let's get nuts." Ooh, that's some good stuff.
Right.
Oh, that's very funny. But what else? There's, again, we are kind
Can
of...
we talk about Joker's disguise when he puts the makeup
yes,
on?
Yes.
That was very...
To move back to the Joker, the man gets bleached via our Axis chemicals. Not Ace chemicals. My bad. I'm sorry, movie.
He threw G Fuel on him.
He threw some G Fuel. We're not sponsored, but, you know.
Threw
some some dark green Gatorade. He was bleached from the face and the hair to green and white. And so in order to disguise himself with the normies, he just painted himself over with actual face paint to make him look like he was normal, which is a fun little reversal to how you would think it works, how it normally works.
But mm-hmm. it also kind of is very uncanny.
It is very uncanny.
With the way he smiles.
Yeah, I was staring at his lips the whole time. I'm like, oh.
And it's also like, how do you not notice that?
I mean,
or the line where he says, where he challenges Batman to a fight at his parade, and he says, "I took my makeup off. Can you?" When in fact he hadn't.
Yeah, he put his makeup on.
Yes, correct.
To make himself more appealing to the masses, when he's like, "I'm going to offer you $20 million."
Right, before I kill you.
Yes, he didn't mention that part in the TV broadcast.
Conveniently left it out.
Sometimes it slips your mind. Sometimes like little facts just slip past you. Can't really do much about that. But yeah, I feel like we've hit most of the notes of the movie. It's a pretty easy breezy sit through. If y'all have any other points before someone steps on the soapbox, we can bring them up now.
I just want to say that I think this is certainly top... Is this certainly top three Batman movies?
Again, I don't like ranking things, as you know.
Yeah.
I will say it is one of the best ones, yes. Like, among the one of Jordan's sheer like filming quality in terms of influence, 100%.
100%. Who's going to stand on the soapbox?
That would be you. Because you were the one who suggested, or it would be KP. Because that'd be for you both.
I brought this up because comic book movies are currently a huge force within the industry, and
they drive the movie industry.
Oh, right now they. I mean, we've had a year off, but they have been. Yes.
Yeah, and I feel like sometimes people tend to forget the reason why comic book movies are what they are today. And I feel like this movie, if this movie hadn't ever happened, I don't even know if we would have gotten close to where we are.
Yeah. It's good. I like that. Do you have any specific preference as to what kind of classic you would define this as?
Just classic.
You would say definitive?
Absolutely.
Definitive. Okay, what do you think?
Classic.
Definitive? I was going to be the one man out to say definitive because I thought we were all going to go with Colt. I believe you make a fine argument about how well this stands up and how influential it has become. It's similar to that of, I'm trying to think of, like, Titanic, where it's like, I know it's a completely different tonal thing, but it's like, they changed the way the industry functioned.
Right.
And has still changed the way the industry functions, because it all comes back to Batman, as all good things do. Yes. I believe that concludes our discussion on 1989's Tim Burton's Batman. If you want to watch it, you can check it out on HBO Max streaming, or you can check it out via any other online services. Do you have anything you wanted to say real quick?
I'm KP.
Okay. All right. So
I just wanted to say, because this movie, Adam West Batman was the only thing they really saw. The fact that this movie was kind of half edgy, and then they kind of furthered that edginess on the next movie.
I would say dark more than edgy, because there's a difference. It's a defined line between edgy and dark.
Edgy is when you start doing it for self-gratification. Dark is just you're embracing these darker elements. I
will say. Okay, so then it got even more kind of darkened on the next...
Oh, yes, it did.
On the next one, oh, which was man. Batman Forever?
Batman Returns. Batman Returns.
Batman Returns.
Forever had Jim Carrey. We had Schumacher come in.
Okay, and yes. Then Forever came along.
Then Forever, and then they got, Batman and Robin.
Then they upped the cheesiness.
Then they went back to Adam West. They embraced the campiness.
And then they went with Batman and Robin, which is a fairly infamous
embraced,
movie.
Embraced the... Perhaps too much for some people, for like a lot of people.
What killed the dinosaurs?
The Ice Age!
Listen, as much as people dunk on that movie, what's the one Batman movie that everyone quotes? Yeah, right, it's Batman and Robin.
This town needs an enema.
Is that?
That's Joker from a couple of... I love that line. This town needs an enema.
Like people say, like, dance the devil in the cold moonlight. I don't know, man.
Pale.
Pale. Dance. Pale. Whatever.
Man. Son. I would say, too, though, I just want to say that people should read Batman graphic novels.
Yeah.
Hush. Things like that. To understand why he's such a great character. Because the movies don't always dive into...
Yeah.
The you'll brains have, of that,
dude.
Of that
have some animated movies that will adapt them. And
should we talk about the big failure?
Well, actually, let's talk about a failure. Let's talk about okay. Look, while we're on the subject of Batman, while we're here, I feel like it might be really interesting to talk about this. You wanted to recommend some comics. Go ahead and recommend, like you said, Hush. Do you have any other recommendations for like people who want to get interested into Batman, like any comics they want to look into?
No, I just said. A classic that everyone mentions is Killing Joke.
The Killing Joke. Oh, dude, that for a long time that was my favorite comic. Read the comic. The movie. Go at your own peril. there's a lot to say about that movie and how it adapts to the source material. But if you want to really understand magic, the dark. If you want to see the darkness, but also see why comics function the way they do. You read anything by Alan Moore, he deconstructs and reconstructs the entire genre in anything he does.
I like the Year One.
Year One by Mr. Frank Miller.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's, that also has a pretty good adaptation as well. The Dark Knight Returns, also by Frank Miller. Year One and Dark Knight Returns are basically companion pieces.
Right.
Where you can read like how he first started and then Old Man Batman in the 80s future. You said Hush as well. That's a good one. I'm trying to think. There's one.
Is that a wrap?
Well, Under the Red Hood.
Under the Red Hood.
Under the Red Hood. You want to see the Bat Family collapse? You watch that animated
film. Right, I agree.
Right. Well, I believe that will be basically a wrap. Yes, I do want to say. Usually I preface these things by saying, next time we're going to check this out, I'm leaving it to be a surprise.
Exactly.
It's Shush. It's Hush. It's not Hush. We're not doing Batman Hush. before anyone gets it twisted, we're not watching Hush. Anything's on the table but Hush, in fact, I will say at this point. But so once again, from our team here at Is It A Real Classic, it has been Lit Nicholas Dab. We have Cobra Kai, KP.
Strike first.
There we go. I like how you say strike first on the second half, not the first half. You would think you would say strike first. And then sweep the leg, but you reverse it.
I went theatrical debut.
Unexpected.
Netflix series. That's the order I went in.
And then we have, of course, Ray.
I'm not speaking.
You're not going to say it?
By saying you're not speaking, you're speaking.
Well, Ray, what?
Say
what?
Say it.
So what am I saying? Are you afraid of snakes?
There's a lot.
Yeah, there we go. All right, it's nice to see. And this has been a Go Home Heat production. Lord.
Copyright 2020.
Copyrights 2020. Nick can't speak. Once again, telling you to go out there and find some good content. You'll never know if you'll find the next classic. And
let's get nuts.
Go home.
Cut.